On the Commons is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory membership homeowners associations. Join us as we explore this relatively new world of controlled living, which includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single-family homes. Living in a common ownership development means giving up the American dream. It means giving up your constitutional rights and control over your most valuable asset, your home. Living in a homeowners association means leaving the American zone. This is On the Commons, and I am Shu Bartholomew, Fairfax Radio, and joining us on the air today we have Bill Davis. Bill's an attorney from Texas. Bill, thank you so much for joining us. You've been keeping track of everything that's going on in the country, and you're going to be talking to us a little bit about that.
Well, there's been some interesting developments. FHFA, which is the Federal Housing Finance Agency, which essentially sets the rules for Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and other government-sponsored entities relating to transfer fees, these abominations that the community association industry and various environmental groups have come up with the last few years. And there's also some things that listeners should be aware of regarding. Yes, there's been some developments with the Federal Housing Finance Agency. That's the agency that regulates Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and federal home loan banks relating to dealing with mortgages on properties that are encumbered by transfer fees. This is a relatively new abomination that's happening everywhere in these HOAs and condos, and they're heavily promoted by the community association industry. Mainly the management companies, which tend to be the primary beneficiaries of these things. Also certain environmental groups, where the developers, in order to be able to not have to deal with litigation, they agree to burden homeowners with paying various environmental groups transfer fees into perpetuity on the property in the subdivision, which is just, absolutely ridiculous. But generally, the good news for consumers and homeowners is that the light is at the end of the tunnel for the end of these transfer fees. The FHFA really came up with some rules that prohibit Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and the other entities from investing in properties that are burdened by these fees.
You know, Bill, that's great if the fees are out in the open, but in our association, I know that we're not allowed to charge, and there's nothing in our old governing documents, and there was nothing in the law, and I don't think that even the law trumps that. But what happened was the management company was charging them, and the reason they were charging it was so that they would take your name, if you were the seller, off their records and put my name as the buyer on their records. And nobody knew they were doing this.
Right.
So I'm wondering how many of these are going to get caught.
I think they will get caught. This has just started. And, although FHFA regulates Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, a lot of the non-governmental sponsored entities like, Bank of America, Chase, Wells Fargo, and those others tend to follow the FHFA rules because their intent is not to be portfolio lenders, but rather to sell these loans to entities like Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. And that means that they will have to have compliant loans. So what you're looking at is rules. Anytime you have an HOA or condo that's implementing these things, knowingly or unknowingly, they are going to be denying the homeowners about 90% of the viable market in terms of where people can get financing. And, there's a buyback requirement if someone sells Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac, there will be a non-conforming loan. And I think that the banks are going to end up taking some steps to try and prevent that from happening. And as the FHFA has indicated, they're going to develop some rules And the agencies will, the individual agencies that regulate will also develop some rules, but I think they're going to have to head towards staying away from anything that even remotely hints at a transfer fee. And it just goes to show you that the FHFA didn't believe that they were benefiting homeowners either.
This has been an ongoing thing. This is, I mean, they just came out with the ruling, but they've been looking into this for a fair amount of time, haven't they?
They sure have. For at least a year, there's been a battle in legislatures, and lobbyists for the community association industry have been pushing this in state after state after state. And it's not the FHFA position. They've been pushing for the creation of transfer fees or enabling acts that allow for the imposition of transfer fees that get paid to these HOA management companies. It's a pure windfall. Even the FHFA didn't really buy the arguments presented by the big industry players.
Who were the big industry players? You had a number of them, and a number of them were actually named in the decision here.
Right. If you go look at the actual comments, what's really deceptive is you had all these employees of management companies writing in, talking about how it benefited the homeowners. You had various groups. Sandy Denton, who's the spokesperson for the Texas, what used to be called Texas Legislative Action Committee, or actually, I guess, in her case, it's for Community Associations Institute. She is also the spokesperson for Texas Community Association Advocates, which is the renamed Legislative Action Committee for, that's what CAI apparently had to rebrand their Texas branch into TCAA for whatever reason. But, you know, she commented in on that, as did other employees at the HOAs that she works with. And, of course, they were adamantly opposed to eliminating transfer fees. In her case, they go pay this foundation, which doesn't really benefit the homeowners. Can't decide where the money gets spent. They can't decide who is on the board of trustees of the foundation. The books and records of the foundation are not open to the homeowners, but yet Sandy Denton would turn in tax returns claiming that this is a tax exempt entity and that it benefited the community. You know, sure it did. But to get more directly to your question, of course, CAI was quoted in here. They supported transfer fees. The National Association of Realtors was in here. And in terms of individual organizations, of course, Associations Inc., which is the holding company, our favorite CAI person, Texas Senator John Corona's holding company for his Legion of HOA Management Companies related businesses, wrote in a letter, you know, pleading, oh, we you know, this is for all these services we offer homeowners, and, you know, a lot of frankly nonsense. And it did not appear that the FHFA really agreed with the claims being made by the industry folks.
Is there some place that people can go and see all of the comments? Do you know, Bill? Or is
there is. It's the FHFA.gov website. And I used to know exactly what it was, but I believe it's comments on the August the 15th proposed guidelines. You can look at proposed guidelines in the comments, and when you get to the proposed guidelines, you'll be looking for one relating to transfer fees. And then when you click on it, it'll be a little plus sign. It'll have all the documents that were submitted in response to the proposed guidelines. And there was a few thousand of them.
Did you read them all?
I did a sampling, and I certainly clicked on ones where I recognized who the person was. I thank the FHFA for putting some description information. I, of course, recognize names like Sandy Denton or some of the big HOAs that are using their residents' money to lobby against
mm-hmm.
them.
Yeah. That's a huge problem, isn't it?
It is a huge problem. And you're talking about the lobbying activities?
Yeah.
Absolutely, it's a huge problem. They should be required, since it's an involuntary membership association, they should be required, just like any other involuntary membership association, to allow the members to exclude from any assessments amounts allocable to lobbying activities. That's true of state bars, it's true of union activities, and it should be true of these HOAs. But as you and I know, Shu, at least certainly in this state, and I'm sure in many others, the industry has been very active in trying to prevent homeowners from having access to records to even know that their monies were being spent on lobbying activities.
I'm sorry, go on.
Well, I was just going to say, it's pretty outrageous that you're effectively, that these monies are being taken from you under threat of foreclosure. You have to pay this assessment, and then they're turning around and using that money to lobby for laws that just, you know, that just allow, that are beneficial to the industry and completely detrimental to the individual homeowners. I absolutely think there needs to be an end to that.
How do we go about, I think this is something that's really worth pursuing. I think opting out or being allowed to withhold any money that would otherwise go to lobbying efforts. How would we go about doing that in an HOA or a condominium?
Well, I hadn't thought about it a whole lot, but I'd like to see one of the penalties be the termination of the corporation charter. It's a little harder with condos because it's a different form of ownership. But, you know, for the most part, you don't really need HOAs with homes, with single-family homes.
I want to get down to having the option to opt out, and then we'll talk about possible penalties for associations that ignore your request to remove that or to not collect the portion that will be used towards lobbying efforts. How do we go about setting up some kind of a lobby? Because I think that this is something that our listeners would be interested in perhaps pursuing. I know that a lot of them would like to see an end to HOAs. You and I are both in that camp. I mean, I don't see us ever fixing the problems with HOAs. I'm not that optimistic. I haven't swallowed an overdose of happy pills to think that, oh, yeah, this is the way it's going to go. But I think that a death by a thousand cuts, as Frank would put it, might be in order, and this would certainly be one of the cuts.
Yes. Well, you know, there's been this facade about what a great economic vehicle HOAs were, and that's simply not the case and hasn't been the case. They've just been a machine to help these industry players take money away from the homeowners. And I think one way to address it is economically. You know, if the HOA has to pay a penalty, or perhaps even the management companies, since they're the ones keeping the books, right? They're not just an agent of the HOA. The HOA is kind of like a glove that they're using to take the money out of your pockets for the benefit of the management company. And I think looking at monetary liabilities to them, looking at monetary penalties is one way of attacking a problem, and I think one needs to look at what has been done in states, what kind of penalties have been adopted by states which, you know, address the issue of members of unions or members of involuntary associations like state bars, what remedy they have when the organization falsely represents or completely conceals the amount of money it's using on lobbying activities.
But do we start at the federal level with, say, someone like the FHFA saying, okay, we need this kind of a regulation in place so that it affects the entire country? Or is this something that we have to do state by state by state? The remedies can be state by state by state, definitely.
Well, I think you're onto something there, Sue. I think it should be both state and federal. And on the federal standpoint, remember, these HOAs are a preferred mechanism by HUD and other entities for essentially commoditizing homes and for pushing certain burdens onto the homeowners. And, you know, they're presented to these happy, you know, wonderful mini democracy. Anyone who's lived in one knows that they certainly aren't. But I would, you know, in terms of the economic penalties, one of them would be the tax status of the entity. These are not, quote, nonprofits. They were never charitable entities, and they should not be, you know, any, quote, nonprofit status should be gone. they're out. I realize that the lobbying activities and the prohibition against them are largely tied to 501c3 organizations, not necessarily other entities. But how many? What other? How many 501c3 entities do you know that have involuntary membership requirements?
Good point. That's a really good point.
These are not charitable, and you really don't have a choice about being a member. It's very much like a union or a state bar or other mandatory membership associations.
Let's look at how that would affect the argument that by buying in there that you have agreed to it. The perennial industry argument.
Well, that's simply silly. I don't know what else to say. Did you agree to vote for a particular legislator? Or, if you were looking at why do we bother to allow people to have a right to vote anymore? Isn't that what when you start looking at this HOA prohibition against political signs and the disparate application of that, I mean, that's essentially saying, hey, we're going to allow speech about the HOA is going to protect certain candidates for office with allowing speech about them, and it's going to conceal or suppress, and we don't allow them to do that with respect to elections. So I'm sorry, I lost a little bit about where we were.
The point you made was that how many other 501c corporations do you know that have mandatory membership? I said, that's a great point. And it's the mandatory membership argument in terms of what the industry might say. And they would come back with, well, you bought in there, and by buying into the association, you agreed to the membership. It's not mandatory. See, this is the argument that I've been having with people for years, 25 years. At the time when I started getting involved in all this, you still had some options, at least around here. But in the last, it's more than 20 years, you've had the mandate. And you'd think, all right, well, you've got old housing stock that's 50 years old, and they're not encumbered with an HOA, so there's no mandatory membership there. And you think that that was true, except that what they've done in this area is bulldozed all of those neighborhoods and replaced them with condos and townhouses, and everything has got an HOA.
Well, I would like to say one thing. I'm not trying to imply that HOAs are 501c3s, because generally they are not. But the tax-exempt status or the tax-favored status is very similar, and the difference between a 501c3 is generally a voluntary organization. They're prohibited from lobbying, and you have a situation here where it's getting certain tax preferences. And why should it? Because people are being forced to contribute to these lobbying activities. But to go to your issue about people choosing it, I come back to, well, wait a minute. People need housing, and there's only certain types out there, and these have been fostered by government policies, and there's a certain amount out there. And claiming that people chose it, that's like claiming, well, you chose to breathe contaminated air or drink contaminated water, okay, because you drank it. Alrighty, well, you need to breathe, you need to drink, you need to eat, and you need housing. And, claiming that, well, you chose to live there, that's just silly. I mean, that's like a manufactured contaminant, putting these restrictive covenants that were never designed to benefit the homeowners. They were always designed for the developer, the developer's financier, namely the bank, local government, or the federal government, but not the homeowner. And what's your response to that?
Well, I think they'd say you don't have to buy. You can rent. But why should you rent when it's supposed to be an investment? Right now, it's not, but it's supposed to be an investment. It's always been considered a rung on the ladder to success, is home ownership. It's supposed to be the American dream, right?
Well, but you just made a comment about renting, and the reality is the community association industry has been, despite the myth that these are contracts between the HOA or that owners sign on to, they're trying to hold renters to the same contract, even though the renters are, they have a possessory estate, they're not an ownership estate. and theoretically, they, you know, under the industry's own theory, there is no contract between the renter because they're not a member, and therefore these rules should not apply to them. So why? Yes, you can rent, but the reality is they're attempting to impose the same constraints on renters.
Oh, they're imposing the constraints. I think it's the homeowner that's the big loser because the association has been given the unfettered power to do pretty much as it pleases. And if you don't dance to their tune, they can take your house away from you. They can foreclose.
Right.
If you're a tenant, you may lose your home and you may have to move, but you're not going to lose as much as an owner would. Oh, yes, they'll make your life miserable. They'll make your life miserable just as easily as they'll make everybody else's life miserable. But the fact is they can't take away anything except make you move. Right?
Well, possibly. They could try enforceable detainer action, believe it or not. There's laws that allow an HOA or a condo to do that in this state, which is pretty abysmal. You don't own it, but the HOA is not the owner of the property, but somehow they can file a forcible detainer action, which is an eviction suit, and evict owners. Absolutely outrageous. That's what a number of the CAI attorneys are trying around here.
That's the owners.
No, they're doing this to owners. To
tenants?
To tenants of the owner. Yeah. I happened to be in justice court about a week ago, and to add insult to injury, the CAI attorney, who's a well-known lobbyist here in the Austin area, she lost a forcible detainer suit against the tenant. And then she lost it. Okay, these are pro se people. She's a 20-year attorney, a lobbyist for CAI. She loses. She turns around and threatens the actual owner that he needs to cough up $10,000 to her and her law firm, or else she's posting his property for foreclosure. I mean, this kind of stuff's going. I mean, $10,000 for a forcible detainer suit could have hired probably one of the most expensive, you know, entities in town. But what they're doing is they're abusing. They're getting a hold of the lien that the HOA has and just shoveling in, you know, absolutely outrageous debts. He didn't agree to. She wasn't representing him. The only thing that these people represent is their own pocketbook. And I'd like to see some of them disbarred. But that's another. That's a topic for another day.
Yeah. We could talk about that next time you come on. We never run out of things to talk about, do we?
Well, we've got a couple other things.
Yep. But it's interesting. I have to tell everyone, Bill and I were both on another radio show, a month ago? And it was a two-hour show, and I think we ended up at the end of 2 hours going, well, we never got around to talking about the following issues.
Right.
So, I mean, there's always so much to do, so much to talk about.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll come back to transfer fees, Bill, but there's something else that's going on and something that you've been tracking and something that's near and dear to your heart, and that's insurance. You wanna?
That's right.
Yeah, what's going on in the world of insurance?
That's right. Well, there's. I think that homeowners should be aware of a very troubling practice by a number of these HOA management companies. What they're doing is there are the board members are being led to believe by the management company that they are buying a policy. That's what they're being led to believe. The management company is steering the board, or even acting as agents for the board, to purchase an insurance policy. At least that's what they've led the board to believe. But what the board doesn't know is that the management company isn't buying an insurance policy for the HOA. And what's really happening is that the management company or its holding company, that means a parent company, the management company, actually owns an insurance policy. Let's just say it's $1 million insurance policy, okay? Then the management company steers the HOA, or all of its HOA clients, to what they think they're doing is purchasing insurance from what's called a producer. That would be like an agency, alrighty? But that agency isn't selling them a policy. It's representing to them that it's selling them a policy, That's not what they're actually getting. What they're getting is supposedly a position as one of a number of named insureds on a policy owned by the parent management company, or the parent of the management company. I'm sorry, by the management company or its parent. And this is very troubling because what's happening is, let's take the $1 million example. There are several different types of policies. There's comprehensive general liability, there's property and casualty, there's director and officer. But comprehensive general and liability is, for example, slip and fall, tort-type claims against the HOA, things of that nature. Property and casualty, hey, your clubhouse burned down, or, you know, the fence, somebody ran into the brick wall, or, you know, ran into the gate or something along those lines. There are different types of coverage, but the pattern is the same for each one of these different classes of insurance. So here's what's a little scary, and that a lot of boards have no idea is going on. Their management company betrayed them. They bought a $1 million policy, or at least it was represented to them that they were buying a $1 million policy. But what's happening is every one of these HOAs is paying a premium to the management company, effectively, or the management company is cutting a check from the HOA accounts to other affiliates of the management company for example, a $1 million policy. They're all paying the premiums for the same $1 million policy. There's only $1 million for the coverage under that policy. So if you have 100 HOAs, there aren't 100 separate $1 million policies to where each of the HOAs is paying a premium for a $1 million policy. What the organizations are doing are charging a premium for a $1 million policy to each of these, say, 100 HOAs, but there's only a single $1 million policy. And what that means is there's two huge problems. One, there's a huge risk of underinsurance, or a huge risk of the likelihood of default on these things, because the insurance company can say, hey, we only have an aggregate claim limit of $1 million. We can stop anytime we want. We don't have to pay off any claim we don't want to. Once they hit the $1 million mark. And these boards go in, and they're goaded by these management companies into thinking they've got a $1 million of coverage for litigation, for whatever else they're going to go engage in. And that isn't the case. And the management companies are not revealing what's going on. Here's something else. Consider this. The premiums are not being paid to the insurance company. The premiums are being paid to intermediaries affiliated with the management companies. What happens if the management company or its parent company goes bankrupt? You or your association did not own any policies. Okay? What's your claim? You know, that they took the money from you, but what's your claim to insurance? You didn't own the policy. You weren't entitled to notification from the insurance company that they were going to terminate the policy. And so what the management company and its parent have done is inserted themselves in the information flow so that you really, they can make whatever representations they want to you, and you have very little way of verifying or testing it out. And this is actually not completely contrary to either state law or restrictive covenants in a number of these places that require them to have their own insurance, but they won't find out unless you can get a board that's actually going to look into this. But now think about that for a minute. There's even a federal court in Florida who was quite shocked, the judge was quite shocked as to why the parent of the management company was going to own the policy that they were supposedly selling to a developer. Didn't make any sense at all. There isn't any sense to issue. I think what these boards need to be looking at is breach of fiduciary duty by the management company, fraud, insurance fraud, deceptive trade practices or unfair trade practices, whatever it might be in that state. Conversion, they took the money and they were supposedly just going to pay for an insurance policy and it was not. There's also an antitrust issue here of time. One of the things the management company does is when it gets in there and provokes litigation, because the insurance is tied to the management company or its parent, you can't get rid of the management company once the litigation starts, because that insurance is only okay so long as you're employing that management company. you can't get alternative insurance while litigation is pending. So it should be no surprise to anyone that the management companies, once they sell the HOA on one of these insurance policies or what they or insurance coverage, it should not be any surprise to anyone that the management companies wouldn't go in and try to provoke a dispute. It's guaranteed employment. Plus, they get paid for sending out notices of violation. It's a really ugly situation. And there is one other thing of this that should concern people, the management company's parents' compensation from this insurance scheme isn't necessarily known. But the management company is the entity that's supposed to be keeping the records. Do you think that the management company is an impartial custodian of the records?
No.
When push is going to come to shove on making an insurance claim, when you find out that the management company's parent owns the policy and has been collecting premiums from all these other HOAs for a single policy?
Let me make sure that I understand this.
Okay.
You have management company.
Yes.
Let's call them CAM. Okay. So CAM manages 100 associations.
Yes.
CAM buys $1 million policy.
Yes.
And the payment on the $1 million policy is $100 a month.
Okay.
Okay. CAM charges every single one of those 100 associations $100.
That's right.
For the insurance premium.
That's right.
But there's only one policy.
That's correct.
So Association 1 has a fire.
Yes.
And half the building's destroyed. It's going to cost $500,000 to repair it.
Yes.
Association 2 is sued and is ordered to pay $500,000 in penalties, fees, attorney fees, cover the homeowner's costs, etc.
Yes.
Okay. Association 3 then finds out that the streets have just totally been demolished due to floods or snow or whatever the problem is. And so they go to the insurance company and they say, all right, we're insured to have our streets fixed. And it's going to cost $500,000. Whoops, Association number 3, you're out of luck because we've already paid out $1 million.
That's right.
To Association 1 and Association 2, so you don't get anything.
Right. They certainly have the right to do that.
And I'm understanding this scenario correctly.
Yes, although there's one other little element in here.
Okay.
In order to keep the illusion that all these entities have coverage, there's a number of things that are going on. The management companies are not sending out certificates of insurance. People need to look at their certificates of insurance, and they're going to notice a couple of things. Typically, these might come out when they make a records request or when they, for example, request a resale certificate or something along those lines. That's one of the elements of a resale certificate in this state. Well, you'll find that the management companies will either not provide one, okay, and unfortunately, the title companies haven't really been looking at that too much. They're only concerned about liability for, you know, past due assessments. But when you look at that, it's going to conceal who the certificate holder is. It'll probably be the wrong ACORD form, which is a standardized form used in the insurance agency for many insurance forms, including proofs of coverage or a certificate of insurance. And it may have some very misleading information on there about who the real covered entity is. But that's one of the first places to look is the certificate of insurance. The second thing to realize is somebody's making up the difference, I believe, in order to facilitate this scheme. After all, the holding company is collecting premiums from 100 different HOAs, right? So if there was actually 100 different policies where they were each paying the premium. The the insurance company wouldn't necessarily be worse off risk-wise because it's been collecting a bad amount, the premium amount, from each one of these HOAs for the risk. But what you have happening now is the management company is inserting itself in there and is collecting these extra premiums. And the management company and the insurance are somehow involved in discreetly covering losses that would not be covered under contract because it's, for example, more than $1 million. You can pretty much guarantee with all the litigation going on these HOAs and claims, you're going to have more than $1 million of insurance claims across 100 HOAs.
So you think that somehow the insurance companies are also involved in this?
I do. Because they're definitely playing a role. I don't know how big it is, but the insurers you will find engaging in this practice are what's called surplus lines insurers. They are not licensed insurers in any state. They are considered to be insurance of last resort, and they're generally not regulated. But you know what's funny about this, Hugh, and I need to do a little more research. Surplus lines insurance, typical insurance, there's a protection fund in the state. They're regulated entities, and the state has basically, they have to pay various fees to ensure there's a fund to cover in the event that an insurance company goes under. You know, one of the things people would ask me in school was, what's the difference between gambling and insurance? And I like to kind of think of the difference as being gambling is what happens when you're choosing an insurance company. Okay, but the state, because you're running the risk that it's not going to be around even to pay the claim, even though you've been paying it the premium.
Oh.
But the states have regulatory agencies, and they've been collecting up these things to pay for losses in the event that a regulated entity goes under. However, surplus lines insurance, there is no such thing. So they go under, there's no protection under the state law. The state does, however, charge a surplus lines insurance tax. And I think one of the things that's going on here is that the insurance companies are avoiding paying taxes because theoretically there's only one policy that's been sold. You know, all these other people are being put on and taken off as named insureds, alrighty, on the policies, but they think that they're buying an insurance policy, but they're not. And so the insurance company and the management company are splitting up all these premiums in some fashion, which are the people who are getting hurt are the homeowners and the HOAs that are under the misimpression that they bought a policy. They didn't buy a policy. And they're way overpaying for the coverage that they got. Because here's the other discussion about the certificate of insurance. The only thing that's going to appear on there is your HOA as a named insured. The deception about that is it should list the other 300 HOAs that are on the same policy so that you realize that here's all the named insured.
Okay, so if you ask for a certificate of insurance, there's no guarantee that everybody will be on that certificate, and there's no guarantee that you will know whether or not your association is adequately protected or is being scammed.
Correct. They won't list all the other insureds on there. They'll claim that's a privacy issue between them and their other clients. Okay? I've already seen this happening. They'll claim it's a privacy issue that, you know, that's the insurance of their other clients is not out, you know, not the business of your HOA. So that's their excuse as to why they don't have to tell you the identity or even the number of other insureds on the same policy. And that's what's scary. The way this whole thing has been set up, it's made to look as if you're the only... The document they provide you suggests that you purchased a policy, which is false. Okay, they'll actually state that you purchased a policy. That's false. Then they will also identify you as the sole, or your HOA, as the sole covered entity under that policy, which is false. There will probably be, you know, any number. 50 to 100 is not, you know... outrageous. Now here's something else that's very unusual about this issue. Property insurance in particular is very geographic and very geographically sensitive. So, for example, if you're in Texas, you can have tornado, you could have severe thunderstorm, hailstorm, things of that nature, and flood, but you're not going to have earthquakes, okay? Some of the parts of the country...
Never say that, Bill. We had one here, and we never have some.
Well, okay. The point I'm trying to make, though, is that the risks on some types of insurance are very geographically sensitive, and that's why the rates change with geographic areas, okay? But what we're finding is HOAs in Colorado, Texas, Georgia, Hawaii, and Florida all being on the same policy. That doesn't make any sense at all. None.
Wow.
Okay? And it's very troubling. And like I said before, I think that there needs to be a real investigation by the board into what these management companies are doing. But, of course, you can't rely upon the boards to do that because too many of them have bought into the claim that the management company is an expert in its field. And it sure is. It's an expert at separating the HOA and its members from their money. But as I said before, I think it implicates tying an antitrust arrangement, breach of fiduciary duty causes of action, fraud, insurance fraud, which is specific to insurance, unfair or deceptive trade practices, and conversion. And, it's only a matter of time before one of these goes under, because at some point the insurance company can say, hey, our contract says we got $1 million cap. We don't have to pay a single another dime. And it's going to happen. And the way the industry is getting away with this is using unregulated surplus lines insurance.
So how does the average homeowner go about finding this out? Because obviously the board members may not know, and quite often it is the homeowners themselves who tend to do the homework and tend to learn a little bit and start asking questions. How does one find out whether one's being scammed or not? I mean, getting, obviously, just by asking for a certificate of insurance is not going to tell you everything there is to know.
Well, there's certainly some red flags. I'd like to point out that first, the industry would tell you you chose it by moving in there, right? And of course, when the scam happens years after you moved in, you still chose it.
That's right.
I think there are some red flags. One, look at where the so-called premiums are being paid. Are they being paid directly to an insurer? Or are they being paid to an intermediary? For example, one that's owned by the management company or its holding company. All right, that's one. So that raises the flag of intermediary fraud. Two, look at the certificate of insurance. Is it the type of form that the HOA should get if the HOA owns the insurance policy? Or is it one that simply representation that an insurance policy exists somewhere? Three, look to see if the identity of the holder of the certificate has been put in there or if it's being left blank or if they're putting some little note in there.
Oh, okay.
Four, look for anything that says that you're the actual policy holder. Alrighty. Five, go out and look to see if there's other entities that have the same policy numbers that are being sold or supposedly sold to your HOA. That ought to be a red flag.
So there are a lot of so there is a way of really, because when you were talking about it, it sort of sounded like maybe it would be very difficult to identify this, but there are some readily visible signs there that one should look for.
Look also to see if it's a surplus lines carrier. Look at the name of the insurance company to see if they're a surplus lines carrier or if they're a traditional insurance carrier. They generally have to be licensed or regulated in your state somehow. If they're a regular or traditional lines of insurance, you'll be able to find them listed as such at your state Department of Insurance. But if you don't find them there, that ought to set off some more red flags. I can't overemphasize this issue because they're coming out there and claiming, oh, this is a master policy. Well, a master policy usually means if you had an entity a condo, for example, that consisted of three buildings or two buildings, you could insure each of the buildings separately, okay? But a master policy would allow you to have both buildings under a common policy. What these management company holding organizations are doing is they're insuring supposedly all of their clients' properties under a single policy. There's a more troubling aspect to this. Usually, if you're going to own a policy, you need to have an insurable interest in the covered property. And I ask you, what is the insurable interest that the holding company of an HOA management company have in the clients of the HOA management company's properties? I know that's kind of contorted, but you know, what's the insurable interest there? I think what it is getting their hands on any money coming in from a payout. But that's not an interest that belongs to the holding company or the management company. That really belongs to the HOA. But what they're doing is they're inserting themselves as the only interface between the HOA and the insurance company, and the HOAs really don't even know it, because all this is being done by the management company, who also happens to be the custodian of records for everything.
Wow, you've given us a lot to think about, Bill.
Well, I hope people do think about it, and I hope they start looking into it real soon.
Now, we know that the Federal Bureau of Investigation has been investigating wrongdoings in Nevada and specifically in Las Vegas. In fact, one of the star people that was being investigated, Nancy Kwan, allegedly committed suicide this week.
Right.
So one wonders exactly what has been going on and exactly what the FBI is uncovering.
Yeah.
Would you like to speculate as to how far-reaching this really is? And I've always felt that the same things are going on across the country. We've had two associations here where we've had, you know, similar issues with board takeover and industry trying to force an HOA in the event that there is no HOA or collect fees that they're not entitled to. Of course, you have the one in Arizona as well that we talked about. And one wonders what's going on in Nevada, what exactly will be uncovered, and whether all of that will then translate into looking into associations across the country. Is that going to be too big an investigation for the federal government to take on, Bill? What do you think?
I don't think it's too big of an investigation. I think they ought to be doing a study anyway. I don't know if it's the same necessarily exact, you know, construction defects. That one is about construction defects. That is obviously a problem in condos in lots of places across the country.
Well, it's more than that. It's board takeover.
Right.
You know, it's election fraud. It's straw buyers. It's all kinds of manipulation. There's all kinds of stuff going on there.
Yet another reason why people shouldn't be forced to contribute to these organizations under threat of losing their home. I mean, if they're voluntary, then maybe they would be more beneficent as they've been represented to be. But nobody chooses to, you know, be subjected to oppression the way these things are being operated. And the point that you just made, I've certainly seen time and time again. In fact, I would say a number, essentially, I believe I was sued previously for doing nothing more than revealing the playbook that's readily evidenced by you know, documents filed with the county clerk of various HOA management companies. You know, and I've seen time and time again where they work in collusion with it'll be a CAI attorney and a CAI management company, and they'll go in there and make these recommendations to the HOA boards for, you know, changing the rules and things like this, so they can just go to town. And what I've seen on retaining control Of course, there's the good standing issue. Oh, we can't let you vote if you're not good standing.
Yeah.
We don't even have to let them know
yeah.
because ballots are secret. So we're just going to determine the outcome of the election and say we, you know, counted ballots. Or they'll also do staggered terms. They'll promote staggered terms with some lame example. Oh, we need the experienced people here, so we should only, you know, allow for election of, say, a third of the board in any one given year. The purpose of that is to prevent the homeowners from being able to gain a majority control in any one given year.
Yeah.
So when you get a bad, nasty board in there, they will work on marginalizing the, you know, the one-third that got elected that particular year, and it'll take a minimum of, say, 3 years to get a bad board out, if you can get it out.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. One of the worst, and as you can imagine, Bill, I get a lot of calls from people, and one of the worst stories I heard of came from a state, and I'll bet you if you went online and you looked for HOA abuses and horror stories, you wouldn't find anything in this state. But in
Virginia?
No. It's a state, and I'm not going to name the state. It's one that if you go and look, nothing will come up under that state, so you just don't realize there are problems. But one of the worst construction litigation lawsuits horrors and abuses that was going on happened in this particular state, and the people called me up from small associations that did not have, you know, where you had retirees, where you had people living on a fixed income, all the way up to some of the mega million-dollar home associations. And I heard from all these people, it was the same attorney doing the same thing in all of these associations. Some people actually lost their homes, and it was construction defects. But do you know what? They would not allow me to talk about it. And this is going back a few years. They would not allow me to talk about what state they were from. They would not allow me to talk about the particulars of the case because they were terrified. And this guy, this one attorney, was just holding these people hostage and making their lives miserable, taking their homes, taking their money, manipulating the boards. It was unbelievable. And they would not report it.
Oh, well, my goodness, if you disclose it, it might harm property values.
Oh, yeah. No, they were afraid. They were afraid of personal retribution. They were
right.
terrified. Really, really afraid. And it's not. And when I started doing this 25, 6 years ago, however long ago it was, people didn't talk about the problems they were having because they were embarrassed about it. Now that the stories are out there, you've got more people jumping on the bandwagon going, whoa, let me tell you about what happened to me. And I think that's a good thing.
Yes, I think it is. I tried explaining it to somebody. It was like the old views on rape, where the rapist, you know, they were told the victim was supposed to keep quiet.
Mm-hmm.
Because
it was their fault.
It was either their fault or they were going to be damaged goods, or they were going to harm the name of their family. You know, these are all the same arguments, you know, the industry's tried to use to quash, you know, the families, the subdivision. And, or you won't be able to sell your property if you talk about it. You
right.
know, that's, it's really no different. And I don't mean to diminish victims of rape. I didn't mean that by that. But what I'm trying to say is that mentality of making the victim put them in a position where they have to be quiet, or they can't escape, they can't do anything about it, they can't seek, you know, a remedy. That seems to have been what this industry is trying to do with the lack of disclosure of information, getting control of these boards, and then, you know, divesting people of their homes. From that perspective, it's a similar ruinous type of deal, but that has been changing. As more and more victims speak out about it, try and prevent it from happening, and start exposing all the little games like this insurance. I think it's insurance fraud, personally. But like this insurance scheme that a number of these management companies are engaging in. You know, when you start exposing them, victims. Unlike the rape case, where it was about power primarily, this is about power and money. And when you start making it so, not only is it not profitable for them to do it, but they may be facing, you know, criminal sanctions and other economic sanctions for doing it, I think it's going to really start curtailing some of these practices. But there has to be publicity and government, you know, looking into this, because that's the only people that can bring criminal sanctions, right?
That's
why we need the FBI looking into it, Department of Justice, FHA. What are they doing, insuring loans for, you know, to create victims in these places? FHFA, don't, you know, allow these transfer fees. People get stuck with these transfer fees buying these places. All the equity gets taken away from them. There's a number of governmental entities that need to apply their area of, or they could apply their area of expertise and regulation to address a lot of the unscrupulous activity going on in these HOAs.
Bill, thank you so much. We're unfortunately out of time, although certainly not out of things to talk about. So we'll have to do it again sometime.
You bet. Thank you, Sue.
Thanks.
Please check out our website at onthecommons.us. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to Justice 4HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid, all your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone, united we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine, and enjoy those precious golden years, stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.